Session number 16729, Mr. William Ridley, Reel 11.
Characters in your section and in, within the company that you were particularly involved with, do any come to mind?
Yes, I. there's one really important guy who I started at the top. I always remember this guy. He was on. We won a signal officer. I can't remember his name, but his dad, or what, his dad used to own Northern Goldsmiths. I can't place his name at the present. But we were on this, we're doing lion loading, sighting your rifle on a certain, they were giving you targets to aim at, like, you know, and you were sighting your rifle on the targets and what have you. And we were in the field. There was only about 12 of us. I don't know how I got mixed up with the signal officer. I don't know. But anyway, we were on parade, and we got the order to get out our capes out of the haversacks and put on the ground so we could lie on the capes. And this one of these guys said, "I'm sorry, sir," he said, "but I forgot me cape, the ground sheet." And this officer turned around and he says, "Private so-and-so," he says, "if you soldier till you're 92, he says, "you would never make a bloody soldier." And that man that he was talking to was waiting show BC. I always remember that. He was the waiting show, and he won the VC at Gazala. Characters? Oh yes, we had a good few characters. We had one chap who was a real character. I think I could nearly filled the tape with some of the things that you. First I knew of him was in 1939, and he was one of these guys who would never meet a soldier, and he was in the cookhouse, and this time when in the school at the Alexander Road, the very beginning of the war, and a guy called Charlie, and he was a wild lad, and he nicked a half a bag of flour, and the cookhouse was in the schoolyard, and Charlie threw the bag of flour, sack of flour, over the wall into the back lane. So when he came off duty, he went round and he picked the sack up, and he went to the nearest pub and to flog the flour to the landlord. And he was in the process of selling the flour when two RPs walked in and nicked him for stealing the bag of flour. And Charlie said, "How the hell did you find out that I pinched the flour?" He says, "There's a bloody hole in the bag." He says, "We followed the trail up to the pub from the yard." But Charlie was always, I was billeting with them once at Maiden Newton, and Charlie was, the last thing you heard at night was Charlie's voice, and the first thing you heard in the morning was Charlie's voice. And starting with one, before we went, I was billeted near him when the classrooms at Gateshead. And he used to talk in a queer way, and it was, it didn't say I went for a walk. He says, I received a dear little toddle.
I think we've actually got this on the tape, this particular one,
Anyway, we'll
continue with the others that you remember.
One of them is a bit coarse-like, but it actually happened. And we were at Tiverton, at Maiden Newton, and we were under canvas. And we had just received we had six bikes, and army bikes, and we had no way to put them, of course, so we just laid them in the hedge outside the tent, you see. And these were the days when we were getting very small pay, and the lads went on to Scrumpy. Being in Devon and them places, they found out that Scrumpy was about tuppence or fourpence a pint or something like that, and they went on to Scrumpy. And of course it used to act as a, like taking a dose of medicine. And one night one of our lads, Chess Martin, who was a Londoner, I mentioned he was eventually a sergeant, and he talked very posh like, and the sergeant in charge of the tent was an old sergeant from our section, George Richley, who he went on to win the MC with in the Green Howards. And 6 o'clock in the morning, Chess goes out to the and someone had done their business right up Chess's bike, back wheel and everything. And Chess was, to say the least, very, very indignant. He come in, he says, "Sergeant, come and see what someone's doing to this bike. Come and see. So big Geordie come out. He was about 6'2", you know, and he looks out and he looks at the bike and it's all covered with excreta. He says, "That's disgusting, that's disgusting." And Geordie says, he says, "Well, what do you want us to do about it, Chess?" He said, "I want you to find the person who done this." He says, "I can't find out who done it." And little Charlie Stan, where his place is down on the thing, he says, "Well, I can find out for you, Sergeant." He says, "Can you, Charlie?" He says, "Aye, quite easy." He says, "Well, what would you do?" He says, "Well, get all these bees out of here in a line. All right, up the line." He says, "And tell them to drop their slacks." He says, "And let them all have a poo along there." And he says, "And then let him, Chess, taste the one that's on the bike." He says, "And taste the rest of them along there." Cross it off.
How important were the characters in a unit of men?
Oh, they kept the terrific humour amongst them. Like, you know, I mean, we fell about with that one, you know. I mean, it was disgusting, like, but at the same time, I mean, he used to collect. What they call the man that cleans the latrines? Oh, he was one of them, you know. He used to do all these jobs, like all the dirty jobs, like, you know. And he used to come up and he used to, when we're in Devon, it was like a, like an ordinary dry toilet, like, you know, and he used to clean it up, like, and he comes in, he's killing himself laughing. He says, "What's the matter, Charlie?" He says, "Oh," he says, "the bloody farmer's there." He says, he's rung one of the the chicken's necks, like, you know. And Charlie had said, like, she said, well, what do you pull his neck for, Mr. So-and-so? He says, well, he says, it's not laying. He says, stop laying. He says, the boar didn't stop laying, you know. He says, I was pinching the eggs. Charlie was pinching the eggs.
What was his surname?
Charlie Watson. You queer lad.
In NCOs, what kind of characters did you have amongst those in Devon and Dorset?
They were just good lads. There was very few that was, you know, like bad, you know, like, you know, unfair, not like, you know, I mean, you see, the Durhams was a family battalion, you see, and all the, I mean, the sergeants had, maybe had brothers, and I mean, the Levy family had five brothers in the battalion, you know, and most of the two or three of them that was sergeant, two was sergeant. The last four, I think, three or four in France, you know, four. And Arthur Levy was left, like, I think the last three out of five, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, I can't, there was lots of brothers, you know, and I can't really think of what. The only time that I ever saw any animosity was, when I told you that when we were at Birmingham, I think it was Birmingham, when we were firing my course up there, and it was just because of drink, like, you know, and just scrumpy, like, you know. But we had scraps, like, you know, like everywhere else. I mean, I had one or two fights with lads, you know.
Did you have any contact with Wakenshaw at this early period?
No, not really. As I say, that's the only time that I had really any contact with him. He was just one of the. He was, if I'm not mistaken, I can be corrected on this, I might, but I think he was one of the lads that was sent to our company. You know, now I might be wrong. I don't know. I can't be absolutely sure, but I think that's he was. He moved around, you know. But I can't think of any other. When I leave there, they come flooding back, like, you know.
Have you any other memories of Tiverton before we move on?
Yes, I was going to tell you. I went back when I was in Tiverton, and I went back. And I said to my wife, Jean, I says, come on, I'll show you where we were stationed in Tiverton, like, you know. So we walked down and we went into the driveway of the big house, which I mentioned before. And there was a beautiful house where the cottage had, where the thatched cottage had been, like, you know. And there was a big estate car at the door, and they were loading this, putting stuff into the estate car, and I chickened out. I says, "Oh, how well?" I says, "You have showed you." And my wife says, "Go and make yourself known." I says, "Oh, no." I said, "No." And she says, "Go on, see what happens." So anyway, I sauntered up to him. I said, "Excuse me, ma'am." I says, 40 years ago, so many years back, I says, I was stationed here in 1940, I says, after we came out of Dunkirk, I says, and I was stationed in what was the house here, I says, unfortunately we burned it down. She says, oh, she says, it was you, was it? I says, yes, it was, and they were really snooty, like, you know, and there's one thing that I would like to know. I says, at the end of this entrance to the field up there, of course, it had been ablutions there and put little toilets and things like that, like, you know. And there was a little plaque, not a plaque, it was like a column, and it had like Arabic writing on it, and we had puzzled what it had been, like, you know, what it had been for, and we couldn't suss it out. And I says, I wonder if you can, enlighten me. I says, there's a, that stone beside the tree, it was still there. I says, did anybody ever find out what it was? And she says, no. She says, I'm afraid we don't. She says, we think it's something to do with the memory of a horse. And I says, well, I says, I know it was there, like I said, because all this part here, I says, was all ablutions. She says, John, she says, that's where all those bloody drains come from. She says, they had ablutions here. But they weren't very friendly, so we treated.
Did you know where you were going or
don't know.
When you left Tiverton?
No, no.
Had you been issued with any tropical kit?
Oh, yeah, oh my goodness, they had a tendency for to issue tropical suits and then send you to Iceland, mate, you know, sort of thing. And this is what we were had. Anyway, they had one parade in front of the not far off the big house at Tiverton. And the issued with KD, we were KD and Bombay Bloomers things and whatever. And you never saw such a sight in all your life. It was unbelievable, the state, because you didn't get what fit you. You just if it fit you, it was an accident, like, you know. I mean, there was no way that they come anywhere. And my friend Bob Redshaw, God rest his soul, he was a gaunt-looking lad, swapy legs. We used to call him swapy, and he had a nose like a beak, and it was always red. And he had this topi on that was about five sizes too big for him. And the sergeant major come along like, "What's your name?" "Redshaw, sir." "Is that your bloody topi, Redshaw?" "Yes, sir." He says, "Well, I hope I'm near you when the bloody ship goes down," he says, "when we're all broad," he says, "because we can both get into that." that wasn't long after that that we moved, like, you know. But you wouldn't believe it. If your KD fitted you, it was a sheer accident, right, you know. They just used to throw it at you, and if it fitted, it fitted. If it didn't, well, that was too... Probably, the lads probably went around swapping things, like, you know, and got something that was...
When did you leave Tiverton?
I couldn't tell you the date. I haven't got a clue. May or June. I can't remember. But one thing I do remember, there was three or four lads deserted just before they pinched a 1,500-weight truck in the... And they beetled off, like, you know, deserted. And because they got the word that they were going abroad. And they caught them at the port of embarkation. So they just put them on a boat and they sailed away with us. And they got...
Were they Glasgow lads?
No, they were Geordies. No. Oh, they beetled off. They thought they were getting far away as a can't from Dover, somewhere like that, like or Liverpool, like, you know. But we sailed from Gourock, and they caught them in Glasgow, and we just put them on the thing, and they done. I think they got 28 days, because in them days they didn't. They were too valuable to court martial, sort of thing, like, you know. That, at least that's only my idea, like, because I mean. If they'd done that nowadays, I mean, they would get nuts. They wouldn't get 28 days. They would get a couple of years. Like,
do you remember arriving at Glasgow? It must have been quite an adventure, knowing that you're going so far.
It was an adventure. There was no fear of going, or no disappointment that we're going, or we didn't want to stay, or, you know, most of us were looking forward to it, right? We got on the old Arjuna, which was the most derelict boat in the convoy. When you got in the convoy and at night time, you were sailing along merrily with the rest of the convoy. when you woke up the next morning, you were about 10 or 15 miles adrift. And we just used to catch them up in time for the darkness to fall again, and we used to get lost again. We used to get left behind again, and that was there was some adventure on there too, because we were packed, we were in hammocks, and the beauty of a hammock, and where we were, you couldn't fall out your hammock. If you fell out your hammock, you fell into somebody else's, you know, where they cheek the jowl, you know. And the activities on board ship was, used to be battened down at night time. And when it's a bad light in the cold areas of the Atlantic, like, because... But once you got near the equator and that, it started to get a little bit rough-like sort of thing, for heat-wise. And you used to sit, and when you got up, you left your mark on the seat light, you know. And of course, half of them used to run around bare feet, and the bottom of the deck was always slimy with sweat, like, you know. And one morning, we woke up and... First off, we lost our escort. We went, I think was it the Bismarck that sunk? What was the other big ship that up at that time? It was the Bismarck. Bismarck. Well, escort left us with one destroyer, and the escort left us and they went chasing the, I think it was the Bismarck. And one night we were zigging when we should have been zagging, and it was such a hell of a bang, and I thought, oh, been torpedoed. But we stayed with hammocks, like, you know, and just lay there, no tapping, like, and we went back to sleep. And the next morning I woke up, and it was just like what you hear on the seashore, like the water going shh, you know, and it's just like when the waves was coming on. I put my head over the side of the ship, like other side of the hammock, like, and there's about a foot of water on the deck, and there was blankets, and there was sand shoes, and there was what have you, floating backwards and forwards and what have you. And what had happened, the Duchess of Richmond, we had been zigging when we should have been zagging or something like that, and the Duchess of Richmond had run into her. And none of us getting up, like, but when we saw the hole that was in the side of the ship, if we'd known what the size of the hole was, we would have been out. That was one thing, and then I don't know, and which takes precedence, like, but we also took fire, and I had to batten the holes down and just put the huggers in, like, you know, the hose pipes in, and just batten it down and flood the things. And then we got to Freetown, and we got machine gunned by the Free French plane, and that was where we met the I Believe in God. They used to have that canoes playing I Believe in God on the they used to throw pennies and old tanners that you had, like, that was near your steel, like, you know. And
what did you get in return?
Just beg for money, like, you know. But the lad, he said, I believe in God, George. I believe in God. And Tommy. And the lad used to wrap a silver paper around the halfpenny or something like that, or the penny, so he used to sling it over. And can I swear? And he says, he used to sling it over, and the course, the old coloured lad went over the side for it and come up and he said, you fuck me up, Joe. And the vicar was stunned. He says, civilization has been here. And we that was, and then we had a torrential storm, you know, and we got washed, and everybody were everything off, and it was coming down like steel rods, and it was great, because it was, and then there was canopies on to keep the sun out, of course, the canopy was breaking away, and of course it was filling full of water, everybody was getting under and getting the water, that was a great time there, and that was, we got mended there, well, we got patched up there, well, I think, we're there. I don't know how long we're there, a couple of days, I think, I'm not sure. And then we, what else happened?
What was the food like on board?
That wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It was. I mean, when you've been in the infantry, our particular time. I mean, it's different now. I mean, when I went back to Winchester Barracks on our reunion, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. What they were getting fed. It was unbelievable. I mean, I had choice of breakfast cereals, but I mean, no idea. I mean, if it filled you, that was the important thing, it was, but the grub on board ship was canny, And then we got to South Africa. We were, another thing about being on the boat was that there was other units on, And I met two of my schoolmates on the thing. I hadn't seen but since I left school, one was in the RDA and the other one was I don't know what he was in. Anyway, a lad called Oliver. And I met two of them on the boat, In fact he tripped over us. I was sitting on the boat when we back to the but then he tripped over my feet he tripped over us.
When you got to the hot climates we were allowed on deck for sleeping and
I'm saying yes, I'm not too sure. I know they used to batten with down.
The heat used to be tremendous.
It was really the largest. There was gambling schools going on, and of course it ended up with a few blokes with all the money, we weren't getting that much money, but when they were playing, they used to play through the night, day and through the night, and there was some money. I mean, I'm talking about hundreds of pounds, in them days, hundreds of pounds was some, And I had a set of boxing gloves I took with us, and I'd had them for a long time. They were pretty old, but I took them with us. And there was a lad there called Dinky Freeman, and he was he had been a sparring partner for the pros, and it was, to hit him, it was like just hitting the wall, it made no difference, you hit him and it makes no difference. And he got to know that I had this set of gloves, and he says would you lend us your gloves, Marty? I says, I sure didn't you? He says, as long as you bring them back, when you're finished. Oh, aye, I'll bring them back. So I lent them, and he used to start boxing when after all meals was finished and about 5 o'clock and the batten was down. He used to start boxing three rounds with different blokes, up till sort of when they went to bed, and this day he come out, and he'd been doing it for a few days, so I went and wandered across this, and I watched him. I took them across and I watched him. He boxed these two or three lads, and I thought to myself, I think I could manage him, So he was shooting, who would come with us next? I said, I'll put them on with you, Dinky. she's right, or so I put some on, like, and the first round, like, I was digging and diving, and I was belting them, and like, bit fucking get in there, digging them. And I thought, he said, great, I got them. Oh, second round came, God, blimey. He knocked 7 different colours out of me, you know. There was blood all over the place, I had blood running down my back. He hammered me, he must have been playing with us the first time, like, oh, he didn't have second and third round, he didn't have hammered me.